Hello and welcome back to Badass Bitches Tarot for the week of February 24th through March 2nd. I'm your host, Cardzy B. As many of you may already know, I'm a tarot reader and fashion industry survivor based in New York City. I began learning tarot when I was still in elementary school and eventually turned that hobby into a tarot practice and creation of my own deck, Badass Bitches Tarot. We're now in our last week of February and about to say goodbye to this month's cards. The Six of Pentacles, aka the Balance card, which shows us the importance of striking a balance between giving and receiving energy and resources, and also the month's other card, the Six of Swords. This card may have helped us realize it was okay to reach out for help to get through a challenging situation. Six of Swords also may have urged us towards a journey this month that allowed us to drop off some much-needed baggage. The end of February is a great time for this, as we're in a waning moon, moving this week through the moon in Sagittarius on Monday and Tuesday into Capricorn and Aquarius at the end of the week. For more detailed information on the cards for February, you can go back to episode 29 of this podcast, which included the monthly overview. Now for the card of the week. Ten of Swords. Okay, this is not everyone's favorite card. I realize that. However, I think this can be an empowering transitional card. So in the original Smith Rider-Waite deck, this shows a man lying face down with 10 swords in his back. The top of the sky is really dark, but at the horizon, it looks like it's starting to lighten and clear. And the sea or the body of water in the background is relatively calm, suggesting that after this ending, there's kind of a sense of clarity and peace and calm that can be found. This card can often represent the death of a cycle or a situation that allows a truer, better, more aligned cycle to begin afterwards. So astrologically, the Ten of Swords is ruled by the Sun in Gemini. And because Gemini is a two-sided sign, it's said that duplicity often blows up when light is shined directly on it. So it indicates that there's an end of a situation and kind of blowing that up, but one that reveals a more truthful, authentic outcome once that situation is kind of ended and cleared. So in the Badass Bitches tarot deck, the Ten of Swords is Roseanne. She said some pretty terrible things last year that caused her TV show to initially be completely canceled and then relaunched with her character killed off and the show renamed. And, you know, when I was illustrating this card back in the summer, I was really struggling with who to choose. It's a challenging card. And some friends suggested Hillary, and maybe I'm still too attached to her and not ready to fully acknowledge the death of that cycle. But when the situation with Roseanne occurred, I found it to be a really accurate embodiment of Ten of Swords. The message being to learn from an ending that often is brought about by negativity, and really let that old self die in order to become a truer, better, more loving version of ourselves moving forward. So this doesn't by any means predict like an outrageous tragedy this week. It can just indicate that it's in a time to shed something in this waning moon that isn't really in our highest interest anymore, and kind of really release it to clear that and become more aligned. So along with the good news that Ten of Swords can actually be bringing in a more authentic, aligned outcome, I have the best news of all of February. This week's guest is the most highly regarded tarot scholar, teacher, and author of our time. She's written some of the most impactful books of our generation, including Tarot for Yourself, Women of the Golden Dawn, and my personal favorite, Tarot Constellations, and many, many more. She needs no introduction. Mary Kay Greer. Hey, Mary, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thanks for asking.
I'm so excited. I have to tell you, everyone that I've spoken to about the fact that you're going to be on the podcast is, number one, very envious that I get to speak with you, and number two, cannot wait to hear what you have to say. I mean, I think that you're across the board, undeniably, the most impactful tarot author and teacher of many, many readers, including myself. And I, you know, refer people back to your books that are beginning to read. I think that your style has really changed and shaped the way that readers are working kind of in our time period. Can you tell us a little more about how you got started with tarot and how you developed your own kind of signature style?
They're actually closely related, because I was in college way back in the dark ages, back in the 60s, and studying English lit, theater, and had gotten into archetypal criticism. And got very connected with that, was reading Joseph Campbell and Jung and other Jungians. And a friend of mine got Eden Gray's book, The Tarot Revealed, for Christmas. No cards, just the book. And I was so envious. I just kept poring over the book. So I was in Florida and I was asking around, does anybody know where I can get these cards? Only later did I realize that, of course, I had seen tarot before that point on Dark Shadows. But at the time, I don't remember making the connection, you know, when I was in high school, that had always been on whenever I'd come home from school. My mother would be watching it and we'd sit and watch together. So I had some kind of vague awareness in the back of my mind about tarot cards. And then here was this book. And I realized on looking at it that it was about revealing the kinds of things that Jungian psychology was looking at. You would tell stories about these cards that related to people or get them to talk about them, and it would relate their, you know, deepest desires, wishes, issues that they were dealing with. So I borrowed a car when I found the name of a bookstore, and went there. It was the first metaphysical bookstore, and I got my deck of cards, and that was pretty much it. I just started reading for everybody because I had this background in archetypal criticism and literature classes. I approached it from a storytelling focus, and I got that from Eden Gray originally. And then a man named Richard Roberts wrote a book, don't remember the name right, Tarot and You. And he had a reading with Joseph Campbell in it. But his style, because they were all taped readings that he had transcribed, his style was to take people into the cards, ask them questions about what they saw. And that kind of put it all together for me. So by 1970-71, I was already reading in the style that today I call a right reading, readings that are interactive, transformational, and empowering, primarily because of that interactive kind of way of my using my knowledge of the cards to ask people questions. It started way back there in the 60s, late 60s, and went from there.
I think that style and the way that you kind of write about it and help to teach others has been so impactful and empowering, just because I know that a lot of people that are starting to read often struggle with like the rigidity of learning, you know, certain memorizing archetypes or memorizing, you know, reversals mean this. And you really do take it into a tapping into your intuition and also what the clients are seeing and what they're receiving from it. And I think you've really helped kind of shape a new and much more intuitive way of reading. And I think so many of us are grateful for that. I think that was really the basis for myself when I started reading when I was young, like as a child. And then as I started reading about it, your books were the most impactful. And in addition to, you know, Tarot for Yourself and 21 Ways to Read a Tarot Card, which was really about kind of that intuitive style and asking questions and looking at it from different ways. The biggest book that made a change in my reading practice was Tarot Constellations. And I think that like has been such a groundbreaking movement for tarot and numerology. I know this is probably like it's a big question to ask, and there's probably like so much behind it, but how did you discover and develop that system of numerology with the tarot constellations?
Actually, it was through a woman named Angelise Arian. She died a few years ago, but before that, she's an anthropologist and taught at a lot of San Francisco Bay Area colleges. It was her classes in the Crowley Harris Thought Deck that introduced me to this system. I've since discovered that a woman named Janine Javain, wrote a book on numerology and tarot that had a similar system, and that even there's a one-page note from Aleister Crowley that showed that he worked with that, reducing numbers in the cards to get what or I call the constellations. He had already kind of outlined that, although it didn't appear in his book. So it's one of those things that is there for people anywhere, anytime to discover this, you know, working with numbers, reducing them, what's called theosophic reduction, which is, you know, the number 19 is 1 plus 9 equals 10. And 10 is 1 plus 0 equals 1. So you automatically have a 19, 10, 1 as being related. That's the Sun, the Wheel of Fortune, and the Magician, which is one of the constellations. So, but the idea, actually the term constellations even came from Angie Arian. And she wrote a book, the Tarot Handbook, on the Thoth deck. But her story, which so impressed me, was that she was looking at the cards that all added up together, including the minor arcana, and had laid them out on the floor in their groupings. So the 19-10-1 with the aces and the tens, the 20 and the 11 and the 2 with the twos of the minor arcana. She had those all laid out on the floor, was contemplating them and kind of coming to her realization of how they work together, when she got a phone call from Joseph Campbell, who she was doing a workshop with. And he started talking about how he was seeing constellated concepts and ideas around things. And she's looking at her floor with all these groupings of cards by number and goes, oh my gosh, those are the tarot constellations.
Oh, that's incredible.
So there are groupings. A constellation is a grouping. It's kind of like a magnetized energy that pulls together certain concepts, and they form a larger conceptual framework. It's also used, the term constellated is used in Jungian psychology, and other therapists who talk about when certain complexes and ideas kind of group together and form some larger complex grouping that has its own significance. It's like they're magnetized to each other, like Velcro. They kind of hook onto each other.
Well, after practicing the work with tarot constellations, after I came across your book, it's so funny. So I have to tell you the backstory of that. I had read so many of your books, and then a good friend of mine, who's also a shamanic healer, was saying that when he also reads and teaches, and he was like, you know, when I teach my students, the only book I allow them to read the first year is tarot constellations, because he wants them to learn intuitively and through their own senses, which also goes back to a lot of your teachings. And he was like, tarot constellations will change your life. I can't believe you haven't read it. So at this point, it was actually quite hard to find. And I went on eBay, and people, I hope you know, people are selling this book for like over $500, the original. And I managed to get a good deal. I think it was like $100, and it really is worth every penny. It definitely changed the way that I read, and that I kind of understand numerological aspects as related to tarot. So it's incredible. It's definitely one.
It's been reprinted. I do want to say it's been reprinted.
No, yeah. Since then. Yes. At the time that I got it, it was quite, and I remember him telling me, oh, it's quite hard to find. I'm glad that it is back in print. And I've told people that, so they don't have to, you know, go on eBay. And yes, but it's amazing. And I think that I'm not just, you know, for individuals, birth cards, but also for the year cards. So for example, for 2019, adding that up, 2 plus 0 plus 1 plus 9, we get 12, which this year is the Hanged Man in the double digit major arcana, or 3, the Empress. Can you tell us a little bit about what your thoughts are in 2019 being the year of the Hanged Man or the Empress, and how you see that impacting the year?
Actually, to be truly honest, I find it's much easier to understand what's going on when you look back. Through the years, I've tried projecting, you know, oh, you know, this is going to be such and such a year. And it never has the depth or understanding or meaning that it has when you look back and you see the issues you were really dealing with. It's like, you know, you're dealing with something that is very generalized and vague, everything from hang-ups to surrender to, seeing things from new perspectives. All of those things are generalizations. The turnaround in our government, the blue wave, all of that are things that can be attributed to it. But when you look back, the richness and the understanding and the lessons you can take away from it are so much more powerful. Mm-hmm. And they're so much more meaningful than any of the projections that I see. We can always find the connection between our projections and things that happen. But I find it best as a real learning tool. And I've worked with this years and tried the projection, and it's been, helpful and meaningful, but never the depth of understanding. One example in terms of your cards is in working with people over the years, people have said, oh, one of my parents died in a year that was not a death year. Why wasn't it? And I would say, well, what card was it in the year your parent died? If it was a really close connection, something they're really working with, struggling with. And that card always has something to do with the deeper meaning of that death for them, the real lesson in it, the takeaway, they can go forward with, having reached this depth of understanding or experience that card meant. And when you look ahead to it, you would never have seen that there was a death if it wasn't the death card, if it was one of the other major arcana cards. And very rarely is it a death card when there's been a death in the family. That's very rare. But there's always a lesson in the card that came up. So it's not something you would have predicted. It's something that you can learn from, live with. What I do periodically, not every single year, is that I sit down with my guides and I write a dialogue between what I need to pay attention to for myself for my year card. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I get sort of inklings that are interesting to go back over, but the real lessons always come afterwards. That doesn't mean that they're any less valuable. As a matter of fact, in terms of soul growth, they're far more valuable.
I think that makes so much sense. And it's funny because after seeing the close of 2018, which was Justice and High Priestess, I think so many people across the board were resonating with those cards and could really, like you're saying, after going through the whole cycle of 2018, really seeing the lessons that those cards brought to us throughout the year. So I think that is good advice. It's kind of move through it and then go back and see the impact and how we moved through it. One of my other questions, just kind of regarding how tarot has grown and shifted, you've been such an impactful force for defining tarot for the past several generations. What are your thoughts on kind of the drastic incline in tarot card readers and practitioners? Like, I just read an article recently that I think it was US Games reported tarot card sales were up 30% in 2017 alone, and that was like a 50-year high. Are these things that you feel that you're happy about, or are there positive things, or are there things that you're also concerned about in the result of this massive growth in the tarot market?
Things are what they are. And as the older I get, the more it's about looking at what is. Human beings are going to do whatever human beings do, and to consider it better or worse is kind of meaningless. There's always warnings. There are always, issues to be not necessarily concerned about, but, not my favorite stuff or whatever. One of the growths has to do with the ability to self-publish decks at reasonable cost. And I think that has made a lot of people more aware, because through social media, there's all these campaigns to fund somebody's deck. There are all these ways of seeing the varieties of decks. in forums where people are creating decks. You could be part of the creation, you know, giving them advice, being, you know, watching the development of the deck. And so I think that not only helps the sale of self-published decks, but also really boosts the sale of regular publisher decks, because everybody's jumping on board and wants the latest deck. And of course, publishers are really watching the decks and the artists who seem to have a really good grasp on it. And so their decks tend to be more refined, more usable decks, because they've seen what works and what doesn't work. And when you get a self-published deck, sometimes the cards are absolutely beautiful but unusable. And sometimes there's a few gorgeous, absolutely beautiful cards, and then the rest of the deck is kind of whereas with decks that are published by major publishers, you can pretty much count on their being more usable for the most part. So I think the general growth works. And I'm not against any of the self-published decks. I think it's a wonderful art form, and it's a tremendous experience for people. I no longer try to buy all the decks. It's beyond my pocketbook. But, you know, every once in a while I succumb to something, and in doing that, I've gotten a few decks where I realized, oh, you know, I succumbed to a couple of images and the rest of the deck does nothing for me. Or, you know, it was an interesting experiment, but it's not something that grabs me. I mean, I've got over 2,000 decks, and wow, I use a small handful of them on a regular basis.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I can't. That's an impressive amount. Oh my goodness. What advice would you give to speaking of people that are like publishing their own deck, people that are kind of making that transition? Because a lot of people that listen to my podcast are, you know, reading for themselves, and there are some of them that are looking to make that transition from learning to read. They're getting better at reading for themselves, and you know, close friends, and they want to start a tarot practice. What do you think is kind of the most important things to keep in mind when you're making that transition?
So there's a couple of things. One of them is know your local laws and learn about business practices. Because if you're going into a business, it's a business, and you should be aware of business practices. And that's going to put you on the right foot right from the beginning. So, you know, how much money do you want to make? What's your goal in doing this? How do you want to be seen and present yourself to the public? All of these different kinds of things. The whole tarot world is not just about intuiting what cards mean. There's layers and layers of study and learning that really go with it and enhance it. And I think people, I guess this is one of my pet peeves, is even though I feel that an intuitive approach to tarot is essential, we can't miss it. Everybody is intuitive and we're all going to use it. But intuition is actually knowledge plus experience. And so we have to keep learning and expanding what we do. Intuition without any background is a proliferation of people's biases and opinions and judgments, and it's not really any better than anybody else's. Studies on intuition shows that intuition, it tends to be right about 50% of the time, unless you're an expert in the field. And it's helped tremendously by having a kind of checklist, which would be for us the key words that you can double check your impressions, your intuition against, to see if you're kind of on track. Doctors who use their intuition, which a lot of diagnosing is, find that their intuition improves greatly if they have a checklist of what to look through, and they just quickly in their heads go through these points that have been developed for them to be able to quickly cross-check their own impressions. And when you put those things together, the knowledge, the experience, some kind of a checklist or for tarot readers, keywords that you do learn over time, you don't have to sit down and memorize them, that your ability just grows exponentially. I've got one other recommendation, which is my favorite thing from actually making the transition. And that's at a certain point when you feel you're right on the edge, you're ready to do it. Volunteer for some kind of charity situation where you are doing readings, preferably for a whole weekend, but an entire day will do if that's all you've got. And all the money is going to that charity. As a matter of fact, if it's a fair or something, they're collecting it. You're not even handling the money. And you do short readings, relatively short, for the whole day at a very, very reasonable cost. And chances are you'll have a line of people waiting, which means that you could be reading solidly for, you know, 8 or 10 hours. You have to factor in some breaks in there, which is one of your learning. What happens in doing this is at some point you get so tired and exhausted that you don't care anymore, and you just start making up stories that go with the cards, and people are sitting there with their mouth hanging open because you're so right on.
Yeah.
It's that letting go of all of our inhibitions, of all of our fears, as well as all the things you learn about. The next person sits down. What do you say to them? What? How do you introduce yourself? How do you move on to the next person? You know, if they want to hang out with you, but there's a line of people, you know, how do you get them moving on? All these things that you learn in this concentrated time that also involve your having to constantly be letting go of everything that you thought, to just be present in the moment doing it. And that's the best transition. That's like your exam, your final exam.
That is so beautiful and perfect. And that's absolutely how I threw myself into it. And it's true. It's when you're kind of in those positions where it's back-to-back readings, you really have to shed the ego, and you don't have the time or energy to second guess yourself. And it kind of forces your intuition to kick in. And I think that both of those pieces,
yeah.
In terms of putting yourself into those situations and the, you know, trust your intuition, but continue to be learning. And, you know, I to this day, like for years and years, and I'm always reading more, like I have a big background in the archetypes and astrological rulings, but I'm learning more about like the Kabbalistic influences. And I think that that's a beautiful piece of advice too, because I think that some of, and I don't want to generalize, but some of the younger readers are just pure on intuition and they're like, oh, you don't need all of that. But I think that it is such a important combination of both. So I love that was so beautifully stated for advice. And I think that everyone should listen to that. That's an incredible practice to put into place when you're starting.
Yeah.
My last questions, it's kind of, since we're getting towards the end of the half hour and I ask everyone this and I'm dying to know your answers more than anyone. Do you have a favorite tarot card and why?
It's changed over the years. As different things happen, I'd probably go back to both the High Priestess and the Hermit as my all-time favorites. But for instance, I hated the Empress card for a long time. I called her the milksop. You know, I did not want to be like my mother. I didn't like want the Empress in my life. And then I got into a relationship, got pregnant, and wrote a story about the Empress during my pregnancy and fell in love with her. So, you know, something shifted and changed in that experience. And I've had that with so many of the cards where there's a particular time or place where I deeply sink into that energy and, you know, have some amazing experience with the card and travel with that card for a period of time. So I think, you know, over 50 years, they've pretty much all become a favorite at some time or another.
Oh, I love that. Do you have a least favorite at all, of one that you hate to see for yourself when it's pulled?
Well, like I said, for a long time, it was the Empress. And because of my breakthrough with her, I've got a lot more compassion and feeling for the other cards. They all come up as significant in some memorable way at some point, even all the minor arcana cards. So it's, you know, after 50 years, I don't think I have any cards that I don't like left.
Well, that's good to hear, because I still have a couple, so that is encouraging.
Which ones?
I really struggle with the devil. The devil was my, I'm a Sagittarius Aries rising, and I'm very excessive, and I know that the devil, and that was my year card last year, which is very accurate, and I'm actually excited to be moving into the tower after the devil, so I would like to build my relationship with the devil at some point in my lifetime.
Oh, yeah. Well, from a Jungian point of view, that's the penultimate or the ultimate card of the shadow. And it's, you know, to befriend the devil, establish some kind of relationship with him is one of the most powerful things that you can do. So what a wonderful task you had to have ahead of you.
I am working on it, so thank you. And then my very last question, is there a card that you feel, you know, at this point, because I know, as you said, it does change, that you most accurately embody?
Well, I mentioned that both the Hermit and the High Priestess have, over the years, you know, kind of stuck with me. So, and people often say, you know, oh, you know, you're the High Priestess of the cards, whatever. Yeah. Wade has one short comment that's like a throwaway comment in his book on Pictorial Key of the Tarot, where he says that the Hermit is actually Persephone. And so for me, that they've merged somewhat, the High Priestess and the Hermit, into a single figure that's embodied for me in an inner guide figure that really partakes of both. Plus, my birthday adds up to a hermit, a moon hermit. So, you know, that's pretty special. Both of them in both manifestations are cards that they've got their own unique place. And yet, for me, they're almost like two sides of a similar energy.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, my God. I love that. Well, thank you so much. I know that you're incredibly busy, and I'm so honored that you came on the podcast today. I know the listeners are so excited for this interview. So thank you so much, Mary. I'm incredibly grateful.
Thank you for inviting me and for the interesting questions.
Yes, yes. All right. Well, I hope that you have a great weekend.
You too.
All right. Bye-bye. Oh my God, I can't even believe that I just interviewed Mary Kay Greer. She is so incredibly interesting and insightful to talk to. I have adored all of her books and have found her such an important part of my tarot practice. I love her advice, especially on transitioning into a reader for yourself, into kind of starting your own practice. And if you haven't read her books, especially Tarot Constellations, I highly recommend putting it in your Amazon cart ASAP. So before we head out, let me just quickly give you the month's recap. For February, we have, it's our last week of Six of Pentacles, helping us to bring some balance into play, as well as the Six of Swords, reminding us that it's okay to ask for help when needed. And often it also takes a journey, whether physical or mental, to clear out some baggage we may need to release to make room for some good new opportunities to come in. And this week is bringing us Ten of Swords, allowing us to let an idea or a situation end in order to put us into a truer, more aligned place. Don't forget to check out my Instagram Live segment tonight. Every Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, you can tune in for an overview of the upcoming week and a chance to ask your own questions for a free live mini reading. You can also send through your questions in advance to badassbitchestarot.com or Instagram message me at cardzb just to ensure that you get your question answered. If you're in another time zone or can't be present for the live, I will still get to your reading, and that stays on Instagram for 24 hours after the live. Also, I have some more great events coming up in New York City in March, and I'm lucky enough to be a guest on some fabulous podcasts. So I'm going to announce those shortly. Stay tuned on my Instagram and badassbitches.com for those. And if you're looking for an incredible spring retreat, I am the featured tarot reader at Rise Gathering, May 31st to June 2nd, and you can get $100 off with the code CARDZ2019 at risegatherings.com. Also, follow CARDZB on Instagram and Badass Bitches Tarot. I'm always adding more events and giveaways there. Thank you so much for listening, and as always, stay magical AF.